Blog Talk Radio.
Most people
wrote
it already, but, you know.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2522. That's 2522. Tonight we're going to have a really good show. I'm waiting for her to call in. I hope she calls in. Maybe she waited until the last minute to go vote. I don't know. I hope not. But anyway, I have Lori here with me from Alberta, and she is a wonderful person. I was with Lori first before Bill. I guess I've been on the radio for like 11, 12, 13 years, something like that. And she's also an ambassador for Canada. Lori is from Canada. And so anyway, we're going to be waiting for this lady to show up, our guest. And her name is Melody J. Anderson, and she's a licensed social worker. She's a child abuse survivor and a therapist and for 28 years in private practice. She found help through Al-Anon and therapy, and over a quarter of a century ago, I made the decision to pass on my experience, strength, and hope to others who knew this pain. Now, that's just a little tiny bit of her bio. I'm certainly not going to read her bio, because I want people to come on and tell their own story a little bit, but tonight is actually an open mic night, and the number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, what we do in these open mic shows is people call in with all kinds of questions that they might have. Maybe they're still having flashbacks or having nightmares, whatever the thing might be, you know, that they're still suffering from PTSD and some complex PTSD, all kinds of things that people suffer from who have been abused as a child. Maybe they haven't gotten help yet. And we certainly do encourage that they get help, okay? If you look at our NASCA website, that's NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, you will find a plethora of all different kinds of information that you can actually look at on your own, you know, to get help, okay? Now, I'm the night owl, right? I receive all kinds of phone calls. It looks like I'm receiving one right now. Please go away. I'm going to shut my cell phone off. I'll have to wait. But anyway, the point is what I do is I'm up all night long. People know this. You know, I take all calls. Last night I was on the phone until 5:30 in the morning. I don't know, something like that. And but, you know, that's okay because what we do here at NASCA is we have a contact page. And if you are, you know, are having problems in the middle of the night, and so often everything in the middle of the night, you know, seems much scarier than in the daytime, you know, like the spooks come out or whatever, I don't know. But the point is you can call people on that list. Now, I'm listed as the night owl because that's what I am, and we do have one of the night owl. So there are people that you can call so you don't feel alone. See, that's the problem, feeling alone. And it's a terrible thing to have that feeling. Now, we just got over Halloween, and Halloween was strange this year, but I still had over 70 kids. Yes, I did. And I think I bought enough candy for 100, and now I've got a bellyache. Oh, God. So, but anyway, the point is that the kids do, you know, they were going around this area now in different parts of the United States. I don't know, some people, you know, don't like the idea of Halloween, and then there's other people that held the children back because they're fearful, and then there's those that came to the door, and I had, like I said, over 70 kids. So you never know which way it's going to go. So, but I do like all of the holidays, and I love Halloween because the children, they put so much effort into their costumes. A lot of these kids make their own costumes, and this is just so, so cool. So I had a good time. They had a good time, and I've got a bellyache, but that's all right. But anyway, so I don't see her calling in, and that's not good. She might be out voting. Of course, a lot of people waited until the last minute in some states to go and vote. I didn't do that. I voted about a week and a half or two ago. But our drop-off box was in front of the police department, okay? It was in front of the police department. And I felt that that was a safe place, I hope, you know, for people to cast their ballot and right into that box there. It looked like a regular mailbox. But anyway, so what we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about certain things that we know, of course, as being survivors. But then a lot of people, they listen on their computers, they're listening right now. I can see it. And then also, too, they go to the archives later on, and that's okay. And then we are happy when they call in because they can ask questions. So many people are afraid and ashamed to call in, you know, to ask these questions, and it's a sad thing. But I can assure you this, that we're all very qualified, you know, as counselors and so forth on this show, you know, to answer questions, okay? I've worked in many different places, and I know Lori has too. Actually, her story is very similar to mine. And, you know, so we've been outside on the streets. We know what that's like. And we've been beaten. We've been sexually abused. And there isn't anything that hasn't happened to us except we didn't get killed, although we did come close to that a couple times. All right. Now, what I want to say here is, first of all, 1 in 2 children experience violence every year. Okay, 1 in 2. Now, that can be violence in the home. That can be domestic violence. That can be domestic out in the street. It doesn't matter. I'm going to hide my phone because it keeps ringing. There, go away. So anyway, 1 in 2 children experience different types of violence, and it's terrible. And then every 7 minutes, a child actually dies as the result of violence. Think about that. Every 7 minutes, a child dies because of violence. Okay? And then 10 million children are subjected to modern-day slavery. Now, what does that mean? The statistics out there are available, and this is by Global Partnership to End Violence Against Children, okay? This is where a lot of times I do a lot of research, and I always have a lot of information to share. And then that can be like illegal exploitation of people. It doesn't always have to be children. However, most of the time, the stats show that the large amount of them are children. They even use them for organ donations. This is so disgusting to me, all right? I mean, it's all disgusting, but for organ donations, really. And it's all for their personal gain. You know, they get lots of money for all of this. And, you know, domestic servitude, that's usually the older, you know, teenagers, whatever. And then you also, of course, for sexual abuse. And that's just awful. So it's 400,000 American being trafficked every year within the United States alone. See, people, I had to do a presentation on trafficking. If you go to the primary volunteers on the front page of NASCA, you'll see first, of course, Bill, because he's the CEO, all right? And then the second one, I being the vice president, you can open up my bio. You'll see me doing presentations, and usually at Centenary College or Centenary University. Now they've expanded. And I had a lot of fun doing that. Of course, we couldn't do that this year because of the COVID, right? Now, this is no one's fault. Excuse me. China sent it to us, but it has nothing to do with politics. This is what happened. Okay, this is disgusting. And we're all doing our best, you know, to stay safe. But getting back to what I was saying before, you know, with all of the trafficking, I have done presentations on that too. And there's so much of it going on under our nose, and people just don't understand that. I will say about trafficking that they are trying very hard to teach taxi cab drivers, you know, things to look for. Say, for instance, a man or a woman are both getting to the taxi, and they have two children, and the children don't look quite right. Maybe they're too skinny. Maybe they have clothing on that's not appropriate. Maybe they're too sexual with the clothing, whatever. They're teaching them to look for signs. Also, too, at the airports, they're doing their best to teach people what to look for, because a lot of times our children, yes, do go out of our country, and they're used over in other countries. And these children will walk with their eyes cast down, okay? That's just the way it is. They're not going to be making any eye contact with anyone. And that is really such a shame. You know, they're frightened. Maybe they're very hungry and they're skinny. And they'll get on the plane. And I don't know how many people out there, and many of you, I'm sure, have taken plane rides. I certainly have taken off on planes. I've been out in San Francisco and everything else. But the point is this. The food on the plane is not very good, okay? It just isn't. And these kids, they're so hungry that they'll actually act like it's, you know, like the most wonderful meal, like Christmas time or Thanksgiving time, because they're so hungry and they'll just wolf down the food. There's certain signs that you can look for, you know, with children. They're not going to be happy children. They're going to be scared children. They're not going to talk, and they're not allowed to talk. So there are signs that you can look for. And I always tell people, for God's sake, you know, keep an eye on your children, because it happens right in our own, you know, cities and the suburbs too. You don't have to be in the city, you know, for children to be kidnapped. I was in New York when I was kidnapped, but it can happen in the suburbs too, okay? It can happen anywhere. And you have to, it's not a good idea for children under a certain age, you know, to walk alone. Because when children walk alone, they're so vulnerable. They just certainly are. They certainly are. And so there's things that you can tell your children. And I want parents, I'm going to address the parents now, to, you know, to incorporate, put into their conversation with their children, to sit them down and talk to them what's appropriate, what's not appropriate with adults, okay? And older teenagers, too. It's not always just adults. I knew of a place where it was an organization where they worked with kids that were 14 years old and younger, who had actually committed heinous crimes against younger children. Because, you see, a pedophile knows that they're different. And many times what they do is they'll go along with, you know, acting normal because of their peers. But in their mind, they're really thinking of sexually abusing a child. And that can start as early as 14 years old. Yes, it can. What do you think about that, Lori?
Well, it's a fact. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It's sad is what it is. You know, for everybody involved, because there are young perpetrators that are, you know, minors, that are pretty young, and they're, you know, it does happen, right? It's a sad situation. I know I have no idea. Like my brother, I'm a survivor of incest, CSA child sexual abuse incest. And my brother was 21 at the time. But, and I was young, I was like 8 years old, so he was 13 years older than me. So I don't know if he had sexually abused me before that, you know what I mean? Like, it's a possibility that I just don't remember. Mm-hmm. Because I can't see how he would just start doing that out of the blue, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I think back about his behavior. you know, and how he behaved even when he was younger than that. And it's, I try to get hold of those memories, and it's, you know, it's pretty vague, but it's just, the signs are there, you know, but people need to see them. And I think it's just limiting, you know, contact with you. The children, we all know, I mean, everybody who's involved and cares about children know that, you know, the abuse happens where the child is. So wherever the child is, that's where the abuse is happening. So if it's at, you know, and most of it's in the home. And it's mostly by people that know the child, right? Somebody, a family member or a friend of the family or somebody who knows the child. And so they need to limit, you know, they've done studies and stuff. And if you limit one-on-one contact with a child, you know, it doesn't always mean that the child will not be abused, because there's groups out there like daycares that, you know, end up abusing children in every way, sexually too. So it's like, you know, it doesn't always work, but it does minimize the risk. Is to, you know, don't leave your children unattended with, like, another person. Make sure there's more than one around. And it's sad that you have to do that. But I think about that, and I think, you know, I mean, yeah, like you were saying, Carol, we grew up quite, our stories are very similar. And nobody was watching out for me, you know what I mean? My mom just she just didn't care. So my brother's friends would come and, like, take naps with me and stuff. These were, like, 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
Now, would you let that happen with your child? I know I wouldn't.
No.
There's no way.
Absolutely not.
My mom, I don't know, you know, she was born in the 20s, so maybe she just, it's just a level of ignorance. But the thing is, like, I would never allow that. Never in a million years. And it's like, this is just the way it is, you know. This is why children are being abused. Because, because people don't care about the children, right? Horrible, horrible, horrible. Absolutely.
Well, you know, Laura, you make a good point. My abuse also started, with family members, okay? First, I saw so much domestic violence from the age of 4 to 6 between my mother and father. And she's lucky to be alive, or was like, she's dead now, but I mean, at the time, because he would punch her so. I mean, how many times can you walk into a door? How many times can you fall down steps? I mean, she always had an excuse. She was scared to death of him. But then, you know, by the time I was 6 and she had left him, I was placed in with a pedophile uncle. And I took that for 1.5 years. And I'd say, you know what, screw this. I don't care if I die, because he'd tell me he was going to kill me. And I was just tired. We were tired children. You see, this is what happens, because we don't have a childhood. And thankfully, I did have one good friend, but I never told her. Because she was friendly with my aunt. So if I told my friend would tell her mother, and then her mother would tell my aunt that I was living with the uncle and the aunt, you know. So I just kept it to myself and took it until one of my other aunts came to visit. She was a drunk, and she was a funny one, okay? And so she said, Carol, I can tell by looking at you, you don't look right. There's something wrong with you. My hair was falling out because I was not being fed well. I didn't know where my mother lived. I didn't know her telephone number. My father was gone out into California. I was abandoned. So, you know, you have to, like, tread water. You know, like, it's terrible the whole time. You're walking on marshmallows. And I didn't want to make eye contact with him. I was so scared of him. And why wouldn't I be? Why wouldn't any of us be? And, you know, this son of a gun, finally, I told my aunt, and she did know where my mother was, all right, the good aunt. And my mother came and picked me up, and she said, why didn't you tell me? And now I'm just a little kid, but I'm thinking to myself, why couldn't you see? The kids in school, they were making fun of me because my hair was falling out. I was dirty. I was allowed to take one bath a week. That's it.
Yeah,
and that was on a Friday, because my mother might come on Saturday to pay them. And she'd say, you know, she'd say, okay, I'll be with you for an hour. What do you want to do? And I said, let's go to the diner. I was so hungry. Mm-hmm. So we go to the diner, and they gave me the nickname, hey, here comes spaghetti and meatballs, you know. So, but I eat. I know. Well, the DNA doesn't lie. I have Italian in me. So, all right. So, you know, I didn't know it then. But anyway, so the point is, my stomach had shrunken so. So I would get this food in front of me, and I would eat it, and I'd eat as much of it that I could, and then I'd get sick back to that terrible house. I'd tell my mother, pull over, pull over, pull over. And still she didn't catch on, or she didn't want to catch on. You just never know. Mm-hmm. So that's abusive. Okay, that's abusive. It's all abusive. And then in the household, when we did finally get together as a family with my new stepdaddy, oh boy. Anyway, he was a funny guy. We never spoke, he and I. He couldn't make eye contact with me. It was really weird. But we didn't gel together as a family. And my brother, then he started to molest me at the age of 9. And I'd already been kidnapped and raped. This is in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never any end to it, is my point. I'm not going to tell my whole story. But, you know, there's never an end to it with some kids like you and I. We had to be beaten.
Yep.
We had to be raped. We had to be, you know, by family members. And then it happens on the outside, too. This is why
mm-hmm.
we run shows like this, so, Lori, you know. I don't have to tell you that, but I'm telling the people that are listening right now on their computers, this is why you don't have to feel, you know, embarrassed or ashamed, you know, to call in and ask any of us, you know, any type of question, because we've seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, many of us have seen it all. Maybe not all the people on NASCA, but we don't take a measuring stick and, you know, well,
no.
This one suffered more than that. We don't do that. Because
no.
Trauma is trauma. It's
That's
trauma.
Right.
And
it's
they've
all very
decided,
damaged.
Yeah. And they've decided with domestic violence, I noticed this too, just the other day, that I have to keep my eyes open, Lori. I'll lose the studio here. I noticed to see, I know I'm bad. The other day, I was doing some research, and it was saying that with domestic violence, children actually have the same type of PTSD as those who have gone to war. They equate the
yeah.
two as being the same level, okay? And,
yeah,
you know, yeah. And then with the complex PTSD, that's when you have it's time after time after time after time, which is what you and I went through time after time after time after time. You know, unfortunately, when our guys go to war, so often they have to kill, they have to, or they're abused themselves, or they have to abuse other people time after time after time. So when children are watching domestic violence that happens almost daily in their household, that's why they consider that to be the same type of abuse, in a sense, as the same level of trauma as those that go to war.
Yeah, it's horrible what that does to children, and you know, it's like. It is a war, domestic violence. You know what I mean? It's a war
yeah.
in the home, right? It's a battlefield. It's just like a war that somebody in the military would have to go through. It's just they're older and their minds are more mature, and it doesn't mean it's easier to handle. But little children watching their loved ones, you know, whether it's, you know, two parents or parent and, you know, a boyfriend or girlfriend or something, who abuse each other, you know, or one abusing the other. It's just horrible, absolutely horrible, because, you know, they quite often blame themselves. I know I didn't blame myself for my parents' domestic violence, but some do, and maybe some
mm-hmm.
were told, you know, that it was their fault, right, and made to feel that way. Like, you know, I never took that guilt on. I knew my parents were fighting long before I was born, so it was... I didn't have
right.
to worry about that. I'm like, look, you guys started this a long time ago. This is way out, you know. That's not my fault.
Right.
But it's hard. It's so hard to see because, you know, I used to go to school and sit there and in class and wonder if somebody was going to come pick me up from school to tell me that my mm-hmm. mom had killed my dad in self-defense or that my dad had killed my mother. And that was a real nightmare because that was a reality for me sitting in class. I wasn't concentrating on my studies. I was sitting there thinking about what was going on at home, you know, and
yeah.
And then when I went home after school, I had just fear and terror as my legs would cross the threshold, you know, going in the screen door, going in the house, not knowing what I'm going to come into, you know, that it is very scary for children who are being abused. And it just goes on. And for, you know, for some of us, it went on for our whole entire youth and childhood. Right? And it's a...
Yeah.
For a lot of children that don't get, there's no help, you know, there's no, it just continues on and on. It's very difficult. And so we know it's tough.
Back when we were kids, and certainly when I was a kid, there wasn't, you know, like a place to go to get help. I mean, sure, you could go to the police department, but kids don't want to go to the police department. Because they're scared and they don't know if the police are going to help or anything. And I happen to love cops. I don't want to get this wrong, okay? I worked
yeah, I
with
do
them
too.
At detention.
I'm
yeah.
all for
yeah.
Police.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We have to have our police. We absolutely do. Or it'd be
like
the Wild
West
out there.
Well, it's just like, you need help.
That's, right?
You know. When I
well,
need help,
what's
I,
so funny?
I got a call.
Well,
so I do appreciate I appreciate them too.
No, I absolutely do. You know, but, you know, we'd have no place to go, and we were afraid to tell. We were afraid to tell. And because,
well,
you know, I'll get beat up if I tell. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, children's minds are not prepared to deal with that sort of thing. And that's why so many times people have asked me, how come you didn't tell a teacher? Well, I was flagged in the system already. All of my siblings were, because my parents were brought up on child abuse charges. So we were already flagged in the system. We had CPS involved. And the teachers, whether they were watching, they probably were, for signs and stuff. They didn't really ever, there was only one teacher that ever asked me if things were going okay, and that's when I was like in the seventh grade. Otherwise, before that, I think they were just making observations. You know, it's kind of like nobody cared. You know, show up with a black eye, bump on the head, you know, bruises and welts, and they didn't care.
No, they didn't.
Know.
They didn't. And you know what, Lori, back then, in those days, it's like the parents thought they had a right. You know, if they want to take a belt to their kid, all right, maybe that's the way they were brought up, you know. They were brought up that way, so they figured it's okay. I mean, I got through it, right? Yeah, you got through it, and maybe you're an alcoholic, too. You know what I'm saying? You're drinking too much, or maybe you're gambling, or maybe you're whatever you're doing. You know, you're dysfunctional. People,
yeah,
kids.
They didn't get through it. That's the whole issue.
That's
it's
it.
That whole.
That's exactly
whole
right.
Victim
that's
thing,
right?
It's, they're not okay, right? They need help.
No, it's not.
And,
no.
Well, listen, my parents were both abused as children, and that was a big part of their problem. And they had an opportunity to get help when they were brought up on charges, child abuse charges, but they went to like two counseling sessions and then they didn't want to continue. They just blew it off, right? And yet my mom would cry the blues about how her mother had treated her and what she had done to the family, you know what I mean? But then she would abuse her own children, right? And I was like, well, it was always weird in my mind. I was like, well, you know, she was abused and she knew how much it hurt her. What happened to her and her siblings, my aunts and uncles. But the thing is like, she then abused me, and then I wasn't allowed to say anything. I wasn't allowed to, like, stand up for myself. And I was like, well, this just doesn't make sense at all. Like, in my mind, I was like, you're crying the blues about your own abuse, but yet you would abuse me, and I'm not allowed to say anything.
People's minds get screwed up. No, it's not fair.
Oh, she was.
That people's minds get so screwed up. Yeah, they do.
Like, my mom used to help. She had the right to kill. Yeah. when she'd be beating
well,
on me.
Well, let me tell
you
something. Let me tell you something. My mother was brought up like a princess, okay? She was a farm girl. Her parents owned a farm out in Iowa, okay? That's on that side of the family. And she had brothers. My mother wasn't allowed to walk through mud. If it was muddy out, one of the brothers had to, no matter how old she was, mind you, had to pick her up and carry her into the house. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
My mother stole a family car. And I think it was a Model T Ford or something. I don't know. It probably was. But anyway, she stole a car and went joyriding. Okay? And nothing happened to her. You know, she didn't get hit. She never got hit. She never got screamed at. There was none of that stuff going on. But the boys got hit. Okay? They were supposed to be out in the fields working and all this other stuff and working hard. And maybe my grandfather didn't like the way that they were working. So they would get hit very, very hard. And my one, of course, they would be my uncles, okay? My one uncle, he had a terrible life because he was so upset all the time. And he chose, you know, strange ways of living. I'm not going to go into detail about my poor uncle. I felt sorry for him when I first met him. This is a good uncle. But he tried all different kinds of ways to make money. He didn't have any sense of self. He had no self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this is what so happens so often, you know, to children who are beaten. Now, my mother, she made me clean up after my brother. If my brother came home from school and he made a mess, you know, for a snack, whatever, first of all, I wasn't allowed to have a snack. And if he made a mess, I had to clean the mess up, okay? So there's no justice. So I would think to myself, screw this at times, you know? And I would stand up for myself, and then I'd get switched. She'd make me go out to the woods, and she'd come with it, you know, come with me, and she'd say, you make sure it's a good switch. So I learned as the switchings would happen that if I got a switch that had brown in it, it was dying, okay, to switch, and it wouldn't hurt as much. So I learned this, and then finally she caught on. And then she started to, she started to go and pick
the
switches. That's what it is kind
the
of funny.
You have to go
but,
through
you know,
that's terrible.
I know.
That's
now, here,
bad.
My point in bringing this up is that she was brought up in such a way where she could do no wrong, okay, and was so pampered horribly pampered, and so she became the mother that acted like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying because my grandmother, my mom's mom was her abuser, but supposedly that's how she grew up. She grew up very pampered. And like a queen, you know. And so I think when she married my grandfather, he was a farmer. She wasn't happy with the lifestyle, I guess, and took it out on him and the children. So my mom was the oldest and took a lot of the brunt of the abuse, supposedly from, you know, because she didn't want her younger siblings to be abused. So she would take on most of the abuse. So, you know, that's horrible, like absolutely horrible. But it does run in families. But I kind of wonder what happened to my grandmother. But my grandmother, this was back in the 20s, you know, like 30s. She took, the Depression, dirty 30s. And she took in a bunch of orphans from this orphanage that was overflowing. And my mom was older, like one of the oldest siblings. So she remembers all this, really. She remembered it very well. And my mom's been passed away now for many years, but she would tell me these things, right? And she said these siblings, my grandmother was beating on them like dogs, just beating them with a whip. That's what my grandmother would whip them with, a whip, like a horse whip, right? And they laughed. My mom said she saw them going down the road one day. They all took off. And she was like, well, where are you guys going to go? And they were like, we don't care where we're going to go, but we're not staying here with her. So they ran.
Well, you see, that's what happens.
And
that's what happens.
You know, this
sad
because they were already orphaned, you know, and then to go end up with my grandmother who then abused them.
Yeah.
And then they hit the streets, and I wonder, you know, today they would have been younger than my mom, right? So they would have been so if they lived and survived, they're probably, you know, in their 70s. And I think about this, and I'm like, you know, 80s somewhere, and I think, you know, who were those kids, right? Just horrible. But my grandmother was responsible for one of my uncle's deaths, and this was back, of course, like in the 30s, and nobody cared, you know, like she beat him with a horse whip and then made him sleep in a barn, and he got pneumonia and he died from his wounds and from pneumonia. And she never, there was no question about, oh, you know, is she, you know, this is just a criminal act, you know, was she partly responsible for his death? They just buried him, no problem, you know, whatever. And so that's why my mom was like, when she was beating on me, she's like, I could kill you, it's my right. If I want to kill you, I can kill you. And she would tell me this all the time. And I was like, go ahead and kill me. After a while, not at first. I mean, at first I was like, no, don't kill me, right? But after a while, I was like, you know what? Go ahead. You've already killed me
just
anyway.
Get it over with. Get it over with.
I was like,
yeah,
go for
it. I hear you.
You know? And then that would really make her mad. And then she'd really beat me up, right? It was just absolutely horrible. You know, the kid, you know, you just don't do that to children. And when I see the headlines out here, just this last week, I've seen so many headlines of children who have been murdered by their parents or a step parent. You know, it's happening right all the time. And where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? People say, well, it doesn't do any good to get angry. Well, no, but we need everybody's voice speaking out about this. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't my children either, but I care. People will say, well, you only care because you were abused. No, that's not true. These are human beings. These are living human beings that don't deserve to be abused. That's terrible. Nobody deserves to be abused, right? So,
well, children don't have rights. You know, you see, that's the problem. Worry, children don't have rights. They're supposed to, no matter what happens in the family, okay, they're supposed to, you know, close their eyes if it's bad, keep your mouth shut, and if something happens to you, well, it's because the parents felt like doing it, you know. Now, today we do have some better laws, though. I mean, we need so many more laws changed and fixed. I get involved with people who are in the midst of trying to do that. And we do have organizations. We do have, I'm going to have them on the show really soon. I'll call them. But 1-800-4-A-CHILD. Now, you know, many times I hand these cards out wherever I go, and it's already out in this neighborhood that, you know, what I do. I'm with NASCA, and they call me the mouth, they like that, and the night owl and all this other stuff. You know? You know? So they've been listening to this show, okay? So this is funny. And I found that out on Halloween night, okay? Hey, you're the one that's on the host, the one with the mouth. You're the night owl. Yeah, I've heard about you. Yeah, I know you. Okay. So maybe it was funny, but I like that. Hey, you want more candy? Huh? You know? You know? So, but anyway, yeah. But, you know, and one guy who's walking down the street. Now, this is a guy. He's walking down the street, and most of the kids had stopped. You know, he was like, they were the last people. And there were no children. And this guy had on a dress. He had on a dress.
Oh, yeah.
And, he had on a sleeveless dress. And he came over to me and he said, would you wear this? And I said, well, yeah, if it was shorter, because I'm short, okay? So my mind's thinking, well, dress is too long. You know, I want a short dress. My legs aren't that bad, okay? All right. But, you know, so... he looked at me and said, you're beautiful. You're beautiful. I said, are you drunk? So he had a bottle of beer. He said, she caught me. He said, but you're still pretty. And I said, well, that's nice. I thought the candy and beer, they don't go together. And they said, no. So there were two other people with him, and they were laughing their asses off. I mean, I had a really good time. You know, it was funny. You know, but the point is the NASCA is getting around. And I have handed out only a few cards in this neighborhood because most people stick very much to themselves in this neighborhood, Okay. We have bears, we have coyotes, and I have my Alexa play the coyote howl for my cat because my cat thinks she wants to go out. No. So then I'll have the Alexa play the howl, and then she gets wide-eyed, and that buys me some time, all right? So anyway, you know, so I mean, they're a different breed of people. They're different. Okay, I'm really with very country. I'm going to put it this way: country people, and they have their own little cliques, I'm sure, you know, because some are born in this area. But this is a huge adjustment for me, even 2 years later. Because I'm used to people being all around and handing out cards all over the place and talking to people and giving them information, people knocking on my door at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, taking people to the hospital because they got beat up, whatever. And women who were abused by their husband, you know, stuff like this. This is what I did in Phillipsburg and other places that I lived at, and Dover also. But, you know, so I'm happy that NASCA has gotten out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, because okay, we're a little radio show. We both, I know, I've been on regular radio shows. I've been on WRNJ and a couple others, and you know, and this is our heart, though, is to speak about child abuse, and people out there. If you are, you know, if you have a question, if you are worried about calling in, you know, please don't feel funny because, as you can tell, Lori and I have been through the mill, okay? The telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. I have a funny feeling that people, I know, see, every state is different, okay? And a lot of states, they're waiting until the very last night to vote. And that would be now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people will be watching the voting stuff tonight.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
I'm in Canada, but I'm from the States, so I grew up in the States, so I know all about it. And
well,
I just
there
live
you
in
go.
Canada,
but
I was born in New Mexico, so I know it's a voting night, so it'll be everybody be on the edge of their seat to see what's going on with that. But that's okay, because we're having a good show. It's unfortunate that Melody couldn't be here, and I was just sitting there thinking, I wonder if that's who was trying to call you on your phone or something.
No, I recognized them. Those numbers I recognized, but they call me a lot in the AM. It wasn't Melody, no.
Oh, okay, it wasn't her. All right, so I was just wondering.
In fact, I don't think I have my cell phone even on the contact page because my other phone is always busy anyway, so what's the point? So, Well, it drives me nuts at times, and I'll be just about ready to go to sleep. Oh, no. But that's what, you know, this is what makes a difference. I want people out there to understand. Years ago, now, you know, Lori and I have been speaking that years ago we didn't have people, okay, to talk to. I've had kids call me too, but I've worked with children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in detention. I've worked other places, and emotionally disturbed, all kinds of stuff. So my number gets out there. It's not on the NASCA contact list, but it's word of mouth. I get these phone calls. So anyway, the point is this, is you don't have to be alone with whatever you're going through right now, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that suffer from shame. And, you know, the shame is put in the wrong place. We were victims at that time. Yeah. I want to make it... No, and I want to make it perfectly clear, though, all right, perfectly clear, that even though we went through a lot of things, many of us went so much, you know, it doesn't have to define who you are today, okay?
That's
because
right.
if you get help, you can change your life yourself, but you have to want to change your life, too, okay? And sometimes you have to look backwards at some of the things you did do. I was doing that today, thinking about what I did when I was a teenager. Holy Christopher. And but I didn't really have a home like you. We didn't have homes. So I was out on the street, and the kids that I used to hang out with, oh, my God, we go down the subways. Now, I didn't want to do this. I wasn't a part of this. I do have boundaries, okay? But they would beat people up, you know? And that wasn't right, and I knew that it wasn't right. But I had nobody watching me, you know? And a lot of times they'd steal this and steal that, and for a while I had to steal my own clothes. Me, who came from a wealthy home. A wealthy home, okay? So I was the black sheep, and, well, I might as well put it out there. I don't care. When my mother passed away, which was in 2006 now, my stepfather, before he passed away in 2008, he told me that my mother had gotten raped. And guess who's here? Spaghetti and meatballs, okay? You know, here I am. You know, and, you know, don't take it out on your children. You know, it's not kid's fault. You know,
that's
it's not the kid's fault.
That's why. So, I was born out of marital rape. So I know my mother didn't bond with me because of that. Like, she didn't want me, and, you know, I was just this real burden to her, you know, to have to keep alive.
Mm-hmm.
She'd be like,
I kept you
alive. I could have killed you. I was like, well, you pretty well almost did anyway. That's not love. That's not care. You know, that's
not
concern.
Not.
And that's how a lot of children grow up, unfortunately. And that's it's heartbreaking, really, to think about how many there are. That's why we do these shows. I know, I mean, I don't get involved as much as I'd like to with NASCA now, especially because of this COVID-19 thing. But the thing is that even the little things that you can do, you know, it's so important because there's a lot of people out there suffering. We know this. Struggling and suffering who have been abused and don't know where to turn. And that's why there's NASCA, you know, because there's people that know where you've been. They know what you've been through, you know, if you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
And we know and we can empathize, you know, because we've been there. And we know how hard it is to take those first steps, you know, towards recovery. You know, we can help you at least hopefully find some information to help you get started.
Right.
If you're listening to this and you're not sure, you know, what it's all about. But it's, you know, it's horrible what we went through. And no child should ever have to go through that. I was thinking about that too, Carol, about stuff that I, because I saw like a post on Facebook that kind of triggered me to think about this, about a trucker who had murdered, who was a serial killer in the United States. He was a truck driver. And this post caused me to think about this episode that when I was about 15, 16, somewhere around there, I got in a truck with a truck driver that I did not know because I was at my friend was working at a donut shop and I was hanging around there and it was like midnight. She was closing it up and this trucker pulled up and the shop was just closing. So I think he picked up a few things and he's like, that's my rig out there. And, I mean, I was not – I didn't trust my parents. My parents were my abusers. I trusted, actually, strangers a little bit more than I trusted my parents because my parents were my monsters, right? So I thought, he seemed nice, you know, and he said, he says, you can come. I'll give you a little ride down the street, and I'll bring you right back. Well, my friend actually, thankfully, you know, nothing happened, but let me tell you what. When I got – she wrote his license plate number down when he pulled away. Because I got in this truck with this guy. He locked the door. We're driving down the road, and he says, what if I throw you in the back and rape you?
Oh, God.
And I was like, sitting, he had his hand on my leg and stuff. And I mean, I've already been raped as a child. You know, I've been abused. Like, I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking. The only thing I could think of to say to him was that I said, well, I'll fight you with everything I have, and I'll kill you.
Oh, God, mercy.
I told him, I've been abused my whole life, and I said, you know, you can try, but I'll die trying to kill you, is what I'll do. And he said, well, you just shouldn't get into trucks with just strangers. And I said, well, you shouldn't be locking young girls in your truck cab.
Glad you spoke out.
Well, I would have actually had to do that. I would have fought with everything I had. I wasn't going to just say, okay, I would have fought, I would have dug his eyes out. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Well, I was older. I was 15. You know, I'd already been abused sexually. I mean, you know, oh, my God. This is going on, people, And I, you know, I can't believe that I could make a decision like that. Now, you know, now looking back at it, I'm in my 50s and I'm thinking, what was I thinking to get in the truck with that guy?
Mm-hmm.
It's because I didn't have any guidance. I had no parental care, zero.
Right.
You know, I mean, I would go to parties. I had no idea who these people were, these older people, like, you know, in their 20s. I'd be hanging around when I'm like 13, 14 years old. And you know, and I mean, doing drugs and oh my God. And it's like, I sit there and I think about that and I'm like, I was just making decisions, bad, poor decisions all through my teens in, you know, until I straightened up and got off the drugs at the age of 21. But the thing is this happens, and that's why we see a lot of this stuff, you know, murdered teens who, you know, they run away from a bad home, but the streets aren't safe either. And Carol and I know about that. The streets aren't safe
either.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, people say, well, why didn't you ever run away when you were young? It's like, well, because the streets are no safer. At least I knew what kind of abuse I was going to be getting at home, you know. And, you know, that's what it came down to. And I was, you know, this is the thing. When you don't have a parent who cares about you, you know, as a young person, we're not going to necessarily make the best choices. That's for sure. I've done stuff that I'm not proud about either. Right. I wrote about it in my books.
Right? Like, did you?
I'll just
I think I wrote about it in my book. Yeah, there were some things that I kept private for other reasons, though. And well, I didn't write about my brother sexually abusing me in my book.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't want to do that because, quite frankly, I was scared to death of him. Yet he still had a hold on me. Okay.
Yeah.
And he would get this maniacal look on his face at times. I'd say, oh, crap. You know, I don't know what he's going to do, but I don't want him to do it to me, all right? So I'd just take off, you know. I'd run out the back door and end up back out on the streets. But, you know, when we go out on the streets, okay, we're out there on the streets, we're running away because we're running from the monsters, like you said. And I actually had friends out on the street. I was the youngest. And they took me under their wing, you know what I'm saying? And they were standing there shooting up, you know, heroin and everything. And with me, I was already drinking, you know. And so I was drinking and drinking. And I remember one night, they said to me, "We're not getting your booze tonight." And I said, "Why? Why would you do that?" All right. And they said to me, "Because you drank too much." I'm thinking, well, they're standing there shooting up dope, you know, and if I want to drink, I don't know. So, crazy. So they did 2 bags a day. That's what they were doing. They were doing 2 bags a day. They were roofers, and they had their own businesses and so forth, but they were still good to me, okay, good to me. So I got so scared and so, I don't know how to explain this exactly. I had a bottle of aspirin in my pocketbook. Okay, and I felt this void in my life and this fear. I had to get high.
Yeah,
and I ran into the ladies' room at this gas station they had pulled into. I took a handful of aspirin and swallowed it. I couldn't tell you. I didn't count them. I don't know what I took. And I went out to the car, and I thought that I felt better. You know, and then by 10, 15 minutes, and I don't know. I didn't get my booze that night. They got it for me the next night. You know what I'm saying? But when we're out there and there's so much that we have to, you know, try to bring ourselves up. We have to find a place to sleep. We have to find food to eat. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to do this. We have to do that. Now, these guys were older. You reminded me of that. And they had their own vehicle. And they had their own business. It's just I got in with them. Okay, I got in with them somehow, and I don't even know how. I don't remember. I probably got in with them when I was drunk. I don't know. And I was popping pills. I was doing Quaaludes, you know, stuff like that. And it's amazing that I'm still alive. But they would take care of me. They would take care of me. They didn't touch me. Didn't hurt me. Didn't hit me. Nothing. They would take care of me. But when we get out of the vehicle, and there were kids that were homeless all over the place, and they ranged in all different ages. And these two kids, they OD'd right in front of me. They died right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I had to leave them because somebody called the cops, you know, and rightfully so, don't get me wrong. And I didn't know what to do for them. They were foaming at the mouth. That was terrible. It was horrific. And so I had to run. I had to leave my friends. I still consider them friends because we're like sisters and brothers out on the street, you know. As long as, you know, you're with friendly people. Otherwise, you have to watch your stuff. How many times do we see people going down the street that are homeless and they have, you know, a shopping cart? Well, people say, well, why don't they go into the shelters? Well, let me tell you something about the shelters. I almost worked at one. This is after I got my life straightened out, okay? There were several places that I did work, and they sent me to school, a whole bunch of them. But with the shelters, if you close your eyes and go to sleep, believe me, someone's going to go through your stuff, and then you're going to lose half your stuff. So, and maybe fights will break out. So that's why a lot of times people would rather find a place on the street or find, this would be, of course, the best, an abandoned building, you know, where they can go into and they feel safer. What a way to live. And now these people. Now what kind of homes did they come from? I would talk to them. We would sit and we would talk. And they came from homes
like our homes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They came from homes like our homes, okay?
Yeah, that's right.
And it's so they felt better. They felt safer out on the street too. So they go out on the street and that's what would happen. So
what do we do?
What do we do, Lori, when we get older? We tend to, if we live, we tend to, you know, gravitate towards also jobs that we know about because we don't have to learn it. We already know it. We've walked the walk. We talk the talk, okay? So it makes it easier to go to jobs like that and you know, and try to get them. When I first started out, I had no resume. I'd end up doing volunteer work at the Raleigh Lifers program, Scared Straight, for 3 years so that I would have a resume, okay? And then from there, I worked detention. And from there, I worked with the Emotionally Disturbed at Devereaux. I was a supervisor there. From there, I went to detox. And then I ended up in a methadone clinic, working all these jobs, and they sent me to all these different schools, okay? And I had a certificate, thank God, to prove that. But the point is that I got certified through Trenton, the Board of Health, when I attended university, you know, Princeton, got sent there too. Had to take courses. But, you know, it was only because people cared enough to hire me. And I was still having panic attacks. I didn't want to go to school. Hire me. I'll tell you what to do. I know how to work this. I know these people. They're my people. All right, but don't send me to school. And that was like a flashback from years before when I'd stand up in front of the class. Oh, no, here comes panic, you know. So I started to drink. I started to drink, and I'd take a flask to school with me. And if I knew I was going to have to stand up and do all that stuff, I'd go in a ladies' room, go glug, glug, glug. And, hey, I did a really good report, and I got an A on it. That's the way it was. But you can't do that for the rest of your life. I mean, you can.
No.
People die because of alcohol and drugs, and it's not living. So, you know, I was lucky enough to get help. I mean, they pulled me off the street and said, "You're a mess." And I said, "Yes, I am. Help." And then when I say they, I mean the church. One good Catholic church. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank God I straightened out. But I had my last panic attack. People out there, when you suffer from panic attacks for many, many, many years, many times it turns into panic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Panic disorder is where it actually takes over your life. And from there, you can actually have it turn into agoraphobia, where you don't want to leave your house. Mm-hmm. So the two work hand in hand. Many times I get calls from people who are suffering from agoraphobia. They don't want to leave the house. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. I say, please, as we're speaking, just open up the front door. And it's such a big deal for them to open up the front door. If it's too much, then go to the back door and whatever, and just go outside and sit on the steps, and we'll keep talking. So they'll get air, all right? They're outdoors.
Yeah.
And you do one step at a time after a time after a tap. It's a terrible thing, okay?
For
so
sure.
When you, yes. So when you have parents who don't care, because I told my mother that I was being abused, your parents knew, they didn't care, and they're abusing you too in other ways, you know? And you know, so we have to grow ourselves up, okay? Yes. We make mistakes along the way. We do this. But I have learned to forgive myself for those mistakes because what I do is I turn and look from where I came. Okay?
That's
and
right.
When you're going to come from a place like that, then you're going to make mistakes as you grow up. It's as simple as that. And I'm not going to own any of that shame or any of that blame. I had a CPS worker tell me once, Carol, this was never, ever, ever your fault. Just like we
yeah.
said on the show. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I realized that too.
Go ahead.
When I started my healing journey, I just thought, you know, none of that was my fault. But it's what I do now that I know that as an adult survivor.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I do now that I need to be responsible for. And I need to learn how to be an adult in an adult world, you know. It's been a long haul, for sure. It hasn't been easy. And, you know, to have to do that, like you said, to grow yourself up. And
yeah.
It's not easy, you know, to come from behind the eight ball. That's what I call it. Coming from behind the eight
would
ball.
You call
you know,
it? Would you,
coming
would you
from,
call
from
it?
Behind the eight ball.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right.
Like a pool table. Coming from behind the eight ball, like we don't have the information. You know, children who are abused as, you know, in any way, and who grow up in dysfunctional families and families that are not healthy, you know, in any situation like that, are missing a lot of very vital information on how to do life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My parents didn't have it. They weren't given it to their parents, so my parents had no clue. They didn't pass anything but abuse and garbage onto us. And so it's like, you know, I'm multi-generational lost, right?
Right.
It's been very difficult, you know. But it's doable. And like you said earlier when we first started the show here, you know, you were like, there is life, right? We don't have to be alone. We don't have to stay stuck in that horrible darkness, you know, that we might have been in for some time. We don't have to stay there. It's clearly up to us. And that's what I realized when I started my healing journey. I'm like, yeah, it's up to me where I want to go for the next however many years I'm on the planet. It's up to me to God to kind of to create the day as it comes along. And I don't want to live like that anymore, you know. I don't want to live with that shame and that horrible nightmare, you know, of flashbacks and just horrible stuff. So I started really working hard, you know, and I've been on doing this for like 12 years. So 12 years later, I mean, I'm in so much of a better place than I ever was because I'm making peace, you know, with myself and with my past. But it's not something that happened overnight. It takes work, and you have to decide whether or not you want to do that. But it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. Because
well, you know, well, you're so right, honey. But I just want people to know out there that there are different ways of getting help, okay? You can go to a therapist. You can go to a lot of people, and Bill speaks about this often. That's why I'm bringing it up. AA is a good place to go because I had to go to AA. And it made me really mad, Lori, okay? But these people wouldn't work with me unless I went to AA, okay? I had to go. I was still drinking. You know, I didn't want to stop drinking. That was crazy. But anyway, so I went to AA, and finally I did stop drinking because my fingers blew up and my kidneys started to pound. And I went, oops. Okay,
yeah.
I guess I'm going to have to stop. And I'm working in the field of social services, but I never considered myself an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I didn't do it until my fingers blew up and my kidneys started to pound. And then I figured, oh, I do have a problem, don't I? So I took 3 days off and detoxed myself. That's what I did. You know,
yeah.
I can't tell you how many grand mal seizures I have seen. Okay, because of the places that I've worked. And, you know, it's what we go through, like what you were talking about, what I'm talking about, what we go through as, you know, as survivors who, you know, very much know that there is life after abuse. We've gotten to the point in our lives where we do know that. We know that. But think about the person that's listening tonight, okay, that hasn't gotten on their healing journey yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to that person?
Oh, well, I always used to say on all of my shows, you know, you do count, you do matter. And you didn't deserve to be abused. No one does. And you deserve help. You deserve to have a good life. But you have to believe that yourself. You know, I had to believe that myself, that I was worthy of love, that I was worthy of a good life, you know, and that I actually mattered at all on this planet. And you matter. And I had to learn how to matter to me, you know, because I fought suicidal ideation for my whole life. And I was like, no, I do matter. I matter to myself. I had to learn how to love myself, you know, and to learn to love all of myself, not just the parts that I think are lovable, like the wounded parts too, you know, and learn how to do a lot of self-care and just learn how to take care of myself. Because, you know, survivors of abuse, quite often we don't have a clue how to take care of ourselves and what to do, you know, to do the right things by ourselves, right?
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah, I would just say, reach out and get some help, because that's what happened when I started my healing journey. I was, you know, I started to reach out. I said, I'm going to have to reach out. I'm just going to have to do it. You know, I was just sitting by myself, just, you know, a nightmare of a situation, 42 years old. And I'm like, I don't want to be like this for the rest of my life. You know, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I needed help. And I was like, oh my God, I got to reach out. This is going to suck, you know? And so I started to reach out.
Really?
And, 'cause, I mean, I was a high functioning survivor of abuse. I could hold a job down, no problem. Life of the party, yep, I can go have a good time. But coming home at the end of the night, sitting around by myself, not a good thing. Lori by herself, no. So I knew I needed help. I was like, oh man, I need help. And I knew where I came from. I never forgot that. But I'm like, what do I do? So I started looking around for support groups. That's what I chose first instead of therapy. And it worked for me. It totally worked for me. I got into group support and really started doing the work, you know, getting into workbooks and stuff. You can get free stuff online if you can't afford to buy books. I know most of the time I can't afford to buy the books, so I just get the stuff online that's free. And I just go through it and start doing the work, you know. And a lot of times I didn't do it by myself. I had a support group that I would join, and then later on I had my own support groups that I was running. And I was still doing the work, you know, still doing the work to work through these things, right? And it's made all the difference. And just reaching out and knowing that, you know, my voice counts, you know. We don't all have to go public with our stories. That's not... You know, that's not a requirement. But you need to reach out to somebody, you know. Find somebody to reach out to who's trustworthy, you know, who you can trust and, you know, make sure that they're trustworthy. And then get some help, you know. Don't stay stuck in that mess. It's no good.
That's so well said, And it's so true, too, Lori. I mean, I know people that should go get help, okay. But they're still too embarrassed, or they fear, I can fix this myself, all right? But that might be the guy or the lady, okay? Come on, we have to, you know, say it's not just the men, it's women too. You know, that might be, there you go, the barflies down at the end of, you know, in the tavern. or it might be the guy that goes home and he's drunk and what does he do? He hits his children, he hits his wife, and all this other stuff. You know, the type of backgrounds that so many of us are much, much, much too, in tune with, because that's where we came from. That comes many times before the sexual abuse. And I do like to address, the violence at home, because it's not addressed enough. One of the things I found the other day, advocates say that they are responding to more physical abuse cases than ever before. Well, that's because of the COVID, okay? The COVID has made all kinds of terrible problems in people's lives. People who don't know how to be teachers have to homeschool their children, and that puts extra pressure on them. And the kids are, they're distracted. They're not in a classroom setting. They want to go out and play. You know, it causes all kinds of problems. And, I'm not going to get political here, but I will say that stats do show that children have better immune systems than the older people, you know what I'm saying? And there is less problems. But then there are always so many parents that are afraid, what if they're wrong, okay? So then they end up homeschooling their children. And there's so much trouble at home because of that. And then it says a child who is being sexually abused once a week is being abused more now. Well, of course, they're home more. And many times, like we said way at the beginning of the show, our abuse started at home. The stats on that are staggering. So if if you have a child who has nowhere to go, who are they going to tell? They're going to tell another family member. Who's going to tell a family member? Who's going to tell a family member? And before you know it, the accusations go back and forth. And maybe that's one of those kids of the 1 in 7 who die every day. You don't know, okay? Mm-hmm. Who knows? So there's always that problem also. And then it says for the first time in, I can't read my own writing, in 25-year history, Rain said half the victims calling them are minors.
Yeah.
They've heard of Rain, okay? That's R-A-I-N-N, Rain, that organization. And they have called, they call that organization looking for help. They absolutely do. And that is because of the COVID. If you come from a good home, I don't care what you're going through, okay? Your children are not going to be hit. Your children are not going to be sexually abused. Your children are not going to run away from home, excuse me, to get away from the abusers. They're not going to do that. Hold on. Can you tell I've been talking all day? Holy Christopher Columbus. So, wow. But let me drink a little bit of water. Yeah. But anyway, so they're actually calling Rain. And, of course, people like us, like we people here on NASCA, we get calls all the time too. So the organizations are getting a lot of calls right now. That's my point. Even from kids. Mm-hmm. And it says anyone who suspects a child being abused or neglected, of course, there is the 1-800-4-A-CHILD, okay, number, which I give out all the time, and they are on our cards. And then there's also to another number, and that is 1-800-932-0313, 0313. In Philadelphia, I know there's an awful problem with the because this was brought up in the article that I read, at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children in Philadelphia, stated noticing a change. The director said she sees child abuse as a pediatrician, and it's a 180-bed hospital affiliated at some sort of temple. And all the abusers, everything's going up. They're going to have more than 180 beds. They're looking for beds because this is what's happening in our society.
Yeah.
And this is what
horrible.
Makes it everything. Yeah. I mean, it's just horrific what's happening out there. And what are we teaching our children with all the rioting that's going on, in the largest cities? And it's
violent.
Okay. No, it's not okay.
It's terrible.
One thing... It's terrible. One thing I never did as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult, is I never tore people's properties apart. because I came from businesses always, my mother and stepfather, and my so-called, I had to call him so-called because he wasn't my bio father, I didn't know it then, but they always had businesses, and I took pride in their work. So I would never smash a window or any of that other stuff because I knew how hard they did work. I will give them that. They were very hard mm-hmm. workers, and I did respect them for that. But this is what our children are seeing. They're seeing that it's okay, you know. And there's just so many things that are so screwed up in our world today that the kids are, you know, they have minds of their own. They're seeing. They're not stupid. You know, they watch the TV. They see what's going on, you know, and it's just horrific what, you know, what our children are having to go through today. So if they run away from home, It's because there's too much violence in our home, okay? And so the stats on that of children running away also is just, it's ridiculously large. And, you know, when they're running away, you don't know if they've been kidnapped, okay? Like I was kidnapped. A lot of people have been kidnapped. You don't know. Yeah. You don't know. Or if they've run away. And if they're running away from a family that doesn't care, they may not even report it right away. You know, or maybe somebody else reports it. Or maybe the kid gets picked up on the street by the police officers. They say, where's your home? Oh, it's back there, way, way, way down the road. You know, and then they end up in the foster care system, okay, many times. And there's so many things that have to be fixed, you know.
Yeah, it's
foster
a nightmare.
Care. Yeah.
Like,
foster
this
care.
Is the issue that I don't, you know, it's so important for people to get involved because people think that, you know, there may be somebody listening, you know, people who are listening who don't know this, but, you know, child abuse affects our whole society. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not just an issue, oh, that's somebody else's issue. That's not my issue. That's somebody else's issue. It's like, no, it affects everything. It tells you that the society is sick, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been going on and on and on. I mean, a society that produces parents, whoever they are, and caregivers, and anybody who has access to a child, that's my cat in the background. She's not happy. She wants
that.
A society that produces abuse against children is a sick society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very sick society. And it's going to be up to the younger people to change it if they want a different life, if they want a better world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
our generation, I mean, we're getting up there. We, you know, we've only got so many years left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why our voices are so important. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, speaking out, sharing this information, because this is a very sick society. I know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, you think about it. Like back in the 60s, you know, when our abuse was happening, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't, there was no real care or concern. It was like, oh, well, you know, we weren't removed from the home. We had CPS involved in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, you know, they haven't killed them, so let's just let them stay there. You know what I mean? They didn't care about the abuse.
Yeah, I do.
Now, mm-hmm. in the 40s, that was the same situation because my mom tried to divorce my dad because of the abuse, and they wouldn't allow her to leave my dad, the courts, right? So,
mm-hmm.
that because in Canada, you couldn't divorce except for infidelity, right? But because mm-hmm. they didn't care about abuse. You could beat your wife, you could beat your children, no problem. And we're not talking mm-hmm. to spanking. We're talking abuse, you know? And it's like,
well,
this is horrific. And CSA child sexual mm-hmm. abuse, oh, who cares, you know? That's just a general attitude. There are so many pedophiles out there that they're swaying the government
mm-hmm.
to create laws that make it okay to have sexual contact with a minor. It's like,
oh
my God.
I saw that.
People wake up and smell the coffee. Is that the world that you want to live in? Is that the world you want your
mm-hmm.
children to live in?
Mm-hmm.
That's abuse.
Well, see, that's the problem. Okay, we are so sick. People out there are so sick. I mean, I saw the headlines of that. Yeah, it is. And I saw it about 2 weeks ago. I was reading something, I don't know, whatever. I was online, I saw that. And this guy, maybe it's the same thing that you saw, But he thinks that it's quite all right and trying to get a law passed that it's okay to have sex with a child who's 10 years old. Are they crazy?
They're all those pedophiles are pushing for that. Yep. And
yeah.
there's a huge body of them. They're huge, and they're pushing governments all around the world to allow that. And people get a grip and get a clue. That's abuse. That's not okay. Children's minds are not prepared for sexual relations or anything like that, apart from any sort of normal childhood sexual curiosity with their peers, not with adults. Come on now. Mm-hmm. Get the information. Learn the facts. You know, it's going to be up to this next generation coming up and the next one and the next one. That's why it's so important for NASCA and like why we're doing this and why we're speaking out. It's you know, it's also for survivors, right? But it's also to be a voice to say, you know what?
It's
if that's
the
world
you
want
society.
Your grandchildren growing up.
I know. But this is what we have to do, though, Lori. You know, the shows like NASCAR and other shows, I think we probably do it more, and I'm not just saying that because we're NASCAR, but we – shut up. My phone won't shut up. I'm going to throw it.
but anyway,
oh, my God. But it's just constant. But anyway, the point is this. You know, first of all, people have to care. Okay,
yeah.
I'm talking about adults now. And children have to be taught in the home, again, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. They have to learn the red flags themselves. If they've never been through what we've been through, thank God. But, you know, they have to learn that we live in that type of society. This is the society in which we live. So we have to teach our children so that they're not targets, because right now all kids are targets, you know. That's just the way it is, you know.
Yep.
We have to teach them. Now, I want to mention with NASCA, we have, I mentioned this once before, we do have a wonderful website page, website. And if you go on the front page, the www.nasca.org, you'll see different columns. Now, I'm going to mention two things here because we're coming to the end of the show. But, see, we don't need anybody. We did fine. But anyway, the point is this. Okay.
That's right.
that's right. On the first column, you'll see red lines, okay, red lines going across blocks, whatever you want to call them. Under the first one is programs. Now, those programs, and this is where people like myself, you know, we get calls and, you know, they need a program. They want a program. NASCA is wonderful, but they need more. Maybe they can't afford to go to a therapist. Maybe their insurance won't insurance. Maybe they're not employed right now. Whatever the case might be, okay, they need a program. You go to the programs. You click it on. You ask them what state they live in. Everything's alphabetical. This is easy. This is what ambassadors do, but everyone can do this too, okay? Being that I'm on the board and vice president, I can't be an ambassador. So, but it's the same thing. But anyway, here's the deal. If you live in New Jersey, I'll use my state. You go to New Jersey, you click onto it, and a menu falls down, and you just scroll down. And it gives you all different kinds of programs. I had two different men call me not that long ago, and I had another one call just 2 days ago, in fact. He wasn't from New Jersey, though. But the point is he was able to find a program immediately that he wanted to go to, and the others were able to find in New Jersey also. This guy was from Bergen County, I'll say that much, and the other guys were from down south, okay, the southern part of the state. The point is, today we have programs. We have programs for adult survivors who never got the help, you know, that they needed. And they're just terribly dysfunctional. Maybe they're a very, very bad husband, or maybe they can't go out and keep a job. I mean, it can be all different kinds of things. Maybe they're alcoholics, they're drug addicts, or this or that. And they need help, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they find that help. That's the way to help someone. If you get a phone call from someone and they're in a state, you take them down to the state, and that's what you do. You scroll down with them while they're on their computer, and they will find programs. I have received emails where people have thanked me for showing them the programs on our website, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They exist.
Yeah.
They are there. And most of the times they don't charge, or they charge in comparison a little tiny fee. Like with AA, they pass the hat around and you put money in it, right? So, or a church, whatever.
Yeah, some of them are nominal, like $5 or, you know, something like that. Like,
yeah.
Just for the paper and stuff like
that. It doesn't have to be that much. And people can afford to do that. So you get the help that you need. And then if you go to other areas on our website, you will find the red flags that Lori and I speak about, because it'll have all different types of articles. We have people that come on our show. They're all different kinds of professionals. They're all different kinds of people. A lot of them are survivors, just like we are, okay?
Yeah,
and
they
come on, yeah, and they have their own foundations, their own organizations. And also they tell you all the information that we so often give out. This is why we're able to go out and speak at universities or speak at churches. Well, that was a heavy. I spoke at two churches a couple of years ago, last year and the year before. But anyway, the point is it worked out well, by the way. Yes, it did. I got a standing ovation at one of the churches. Yes, I did. But I did not go to a Catholic church. Now, there's a funny. Okay, all right, we won't talk about that. But anyway, the point is this. Think about it. So, you know, and I'm Catholic, all right, but, you know. But anyway, the point is these churches welcomed me with open arms. I think they're a non-denominational. They didn't care what you were. They opened their arms and they say, come on in, teach our children, teach us. This is what we do. This is our mission, is to go around and help those that don't know enough about child abuse in the organizations like schools, the school system, the churches, and you're going to find your bad people there too. This is why it's the parents' job, all right, to teach children about those red flags. If someone's being too chummy with you, they're an adult, you're a kid, they want to be with you all the time, and there's things, so there's red flags, and it's all listed, and this helps the children. You know, and it teaches the children to scream, I don't know you, go away, if they're outside and someone is approaching them, to run, to scream, things that, you know, a way to keep themselves safer, all right? And and certainly all kinds of pointers for parents to help keep their children safer, like not letting them walk alone, okay?
Right.
All that kind of stuff. But you know what? We're at the very end of the show, and we had no problems. I mean... Well, you know, when it comes to child abuse, unfortunately, Lori and I know everything, almost everything, just about everything. I mean, we always learn every day, but we know so much, let's put it that way, about child abuse, so that we could talk for another 2 hours. But I don't think my throat will take it tonight.
We could. We could actually keep going for the next 6, 7, 10 years, probably. We have an extensive
Absolutely.
Background. Unfortunately, because we were so horrifically abused, I made it, you know, and you made it.
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing, and you know, for anybody who's listening, if you're a survivor, that means you made it. There's so many children right now who tonight are going to die, and around the world, they're going to die at the hands of somebody who takes their life, and nobody's going to be there to help them. Nobody's going to be there to save them. And we just happen to survive, right? But that doesn't mean that we don't know know the horrors of abuse. We just happen to make it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thankful, really, I am. I didn't used to be when I was young. I'd be like, I really didn't. I was so, you know, like you said, Carol, just tired, right? But there's so many children right now who aren't going to make it tonight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to educate the public, absolutely, and get, you know, get the information.
And you know what? Another thing, too, I want to get in there. Because, okay, it wasn't God's fault, okay? I'm going to say that. It's not God's fault. Remember, he gave us free will and free mind. And I don't forgive those people, Lori, who did all these things to me, because they knew what they were doing. But what I have to do is change me and make sure that I don't, you know, become a bad person or all this stuff. And I got through that because I got the help I needed. People out there, don't be ashamed to go get help, okay?
That's right. That's right.
And we do make it. I have to close the show because
okay.
I have
like
30
show,
seconds.
Carol.
It was a very good show. Thank you so much for calling in. You're a wonderful co-host. You are my co-host tonight. And you know what? I love you. I love you, Lori. I've known Lori for 12 years. Yes, I have. Yes. Yeah. And so, everyone, good night. Be careful. Stay safe. And God bless.
Good night, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.